anymore. Baby, it's not mine. I chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Before I bring on Tony Gosling, I just want to make a point here that this recent strategic partnership between the World Economic Forum and the UN is very, very troubling and very, very serious. And we are in deep, deep problems here. This World Economic Forum represents the largest, say, 1,500 corporations in the world. They are planning a reset, economic reset, but they're going forward also with this green plan. So they're not only doing a reset, economic reset, because of this COVID, but they are going forward with this so-called reset, which means that we're in trouble, and they're trying to reset this economy and put us into, bring us into a police state. I mean, this is serious, and I mean a police state. I mean a tyranny, a world economic communist tyranny with this corporate capstone at the very top dictating to us the way we should live and hide away and stay in our homes and through dictates. Dictatorship, folks. This is what's going on right now, and it's serious. We must stand up and fight this tooth and nail into our last breath. We cannot let this continue, and we must fight with all our might to keep this from happening. We need to mobilize all the churches and so forth in the world. So thank you for listening. Here we go with Tony Gosling, really fine person out of Bristol. Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. On the line with me is Tony Gosling from Bristol, England. Welcome back to our program, Tony Gosling.
Hi, George. Thanks for asking me again. Yes, our little connection across the Atlantic, trying to stitch up a bit of a mess that the British have been creating over the years. I think the Americans are now sort of almost taken on the bad cop attitude, and Britain is supposed to be the good cop, even though, of course, there are a lot of people in the British establishment that are rather wicked. You know, people forget, actually, in Britain particularly, they forget that there were quite a lot of, including the royal family, that were pro-Nazi before the Second World War, and actually during the Second World War, secretly, because they wanted Hitler to be a bastion against Bolshevism, and they thought he was a great guy, you know, including Prince Philip, who was educated in a Nazi school, and also the Queen's uncle, Edward VIII, who not only did he was he outed as pro-Nazi, he had as his mistress a Nazi agent in the 1930s, and of course he had to abdicate. But it's also, I think it's a woman's name is Karina Erbach, George.
Okay.
She's written a book. She's a German-born author. She's written a book about Edward VIII and shows in it that actually it was him. When he was over in Lisbon at the beginning of the war, late 1939, early 1940, that actually persuaded the German ambassador in Portugal for Hitler to start, and the Luftwaffe and Goering to start bombing London, because he said,
"Oh my gosh.
The British are, you know, softies, and you're going to have to start bombing them in order to get them to negotiate a quick peace in the war." So the instigator of the Blitz on London wasn't Adolf Hitler or Goering or any of the high command in Nazi Germany. It was our very own royal family, Edward VIII, that did that, at least according to Karina. So yeah, we're living through this very peculiar time now, where many of the generation that fought the First World War, not the First World War, the Second World War. Actually, my grandfather was in the First World War and both.
Okay.
And he kind of he was a medic in the logistics corps, so he spent a lot of time in the First World War hauling bodies out from the trenches.
Oh, man.
In his lorries, and he'd seen how appalling it was. And, you know, a lot of people, both in the First World War, George, and the Second World War, particularly the Irish and the rebel Irish in the First World War, they were very much politicized by what they saw in these two wars, and very much, I suppose, decided that they really didn't want to leave a world in which future generations were going to have to suffer the same kind of thing. And that generation, George, I have to say now, we've got very, very few left that actually remember the gory details of the Second World War. There's quite a few people still who remember the war itself, who were children at the time, but very few. My own uncle, bless him, has passed away about a year ago. And he was an infantryman in the Second World War, and he had all sorts of stories to tell. Maybe I can relay some of his stories at some point. But that generation, and of course, as a journalist, I used to avidly listen to these people who fought during the Second World War to hear all sorts of interesting tales. And I picked up a lot from them, which I suppose made me quite suspicious about the tiny number of people that actually instigated World War II and benefited from it. And the other thing, of course, is that there's an even smaller number in the First World War. Basically, it was Kaiser Wilhelm in Germany. It was King George in England. And over in Russia, their cousin, the three cousins that decided to have a war. So basically, World War One was just a family squabble that went a bit too far. So we cannot have a situation where tiny numbers of people can propel us into war again. And that generation that really remembers that is, I'm afraid, is not really with us anymore. Most of them have died off. Some of them, of course, have died from COVID-19, or with COVID-19. Which has helped them over the hill. And as one doctor I interviewed right at the start of all this, he said that actually they used to call the flu the old man's friend, because if someone is in a very, sort of weak condition, maybe bedridden or finding it very difficult to breathe as an elderly person, catching the flu just, helps them slip away.
Right.
Which is actually a bit of a relief. And that was what he said. He was taught in the 1950s and 60s here in Britain in medical school, is that, you can't pretend that people are not going to die. The interesting thing about COVID, though, is the actual numbers of deaths from flu this year has been minuscule. It's a few hundred, apparently, if you believe that. So, in a way, the COVID is kind of a fake flu it's replaced the flu.
Right.
Even though 2 years ago, we had actually more deaths from flu than we've had this year from COVID. The real, real damage, of course, is being done to society. It's being done to people who were due to have ordinary different types of medical treatment, everything from hip replacements to cancer treatment. That's all been cancelled. And many of those are the casualties, the hidden casualties of the virus. I would say, though, looking at why this should be happening now, I'm working on the working assumption that this is a man-made virus, having seen the evidence really building up.
Yeah, I still think
to a certain extent the jury's out, but the evidence is definitely stacking up on the side of it being a man-made virus. It is because of these inserts, which were discovered very early, I think it was like the 1st of February, 31st of January, by these virology institutes in New Delhi, making it absolutely clear you've got a SARS and an AIDS protein inserted into the coronavirus, just being the kind of common cold virus. And this is an obvious thing for biological warfare people to be doing, is they take a very, very contagious pathogen like the coronavirus, but it doesn't actually have, as the common cold, very, very much lethality, but it's extremely contagious. And what they will do is to stick something on there, a protein, insert a protein into that at a very, you know, sort of molecular level, that will make it far more dangerous. And the other thing is, I think one of the main things from this particular outbreak is that you've got a symptom from the SARS which looks like pneumonia. So what's been happening is, I think we've had lots and lots of people have been being treated for pneumonia with the congested lungs, etc., the difficulty breathing. But actually what's going on is something far more complex in the body, which is more taking place on the inside of the lungs, that is to say, you know, not so much in the lungs themselves, but on the, you know, inside the bodily side of the lungs,
right,
where the SARS protein hits and it stops the body actually carrying oxygen. It stops red blood cells carrying oxygen. It's got a very, very simple cure. It cures a lot of people so long as they take it very quickly, which is chloroquine, which has been available for 60 years or something, and it's very well tested. It's got very few side effects for most people, a few for people who've got other conditions. So, you know, that's, I think, one of the big smoking guns of this, George, and I've got two. I'll just round up my introduction by saying I think there are two smoking guns. One is that the French, in the middle of January, according to Dr. Gold, one of your own doctors over there, has related this several times, that the French doctors, or the French pharmaceutical health ministry, actually downgraded chloroquine in the middle of January from an over-the-counter medicine that anyone can just walk into a pharmacy and buy it without a prescription, and they upgraded it to something which is dangerous, and as she says, a poison. I don't think that's quite what she meant, but it is a really nasty something that could be very dangerous if it's misapplied. So they made it so it was on prescription only over in France, and then they also said that you could only prescribe it for malaria, which is one of the things. But the thing is, it's a tried and tested cure for SARS. Now, if you remember right at the very start of all of this...
What was that medicine again? A cure for SARS?
Chloroquine.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Chloroquine is a malarial treatment.
Yeah.
In 2005, there were a whole load of tests done on this, and they showed that that it's extremely effective in helping your body fight the SARS virus. And so as we've got SARS-CoV-2 breaking out in January and February, you would think that this would be the obvious treatment. No, in France, it was stopped from people getting hold of it. So, to me, that shows me the French, Macron and his cronies, you know, the ex-Rothschild employee,
right,
the banks.
Trying to continue
the French call it the French call him the imposter. Any of the French, you know, sort of activists, political activists, they have pictures of Macron with l'imposteur, you know, the imposter.
Right.
Written across his face, and of course he is an imposter, you know, and they need to get rid of him as soon as they can. So
we
that's one of the smoking guns.
Yeah, we had
that's
a dark smoking
go ahead, gun. Go ahead. Hang on, smoking gun number one. Smoking gun number two is that we had the tail end of last year in autumn, we had both the Chinese and some of the European countries bringing in laws for mandatory vaccines. First time ever in the history of humanity, there'd been a mandatory vaccine, and that took place in China, and it took place also in Italy and Germany. Right now, what are Italy and Germany? They are wartime fascist countries. These are countries where, you know, we have a history of fascism. We have a history of authoritarian, totalitarian governments that hate their people, see their people like sheep for the slaughter. And isn't it interesting that both in Italy and Germany that the vaccines were mandated back at the tail end of last year?
What date of last year do you know?
It was around about September, I think.
September of last year.
All these three countries. There are some other countries that have got mandated vaccines. So I think that this was a program launched, George. For two reasons. The first reason was Brexit. You might say as a Brit that I would, you know, probably say everything traces back to Brexit, but I think in this case I'm right, because it's been largely a European-American phenomenon, the high death rates, etc., the elderly people. The idea really is, I something to scare, to bring about a kind of police state type control over populations. And Brexit was an absolute disaster for the New World Order elite. You know, the Bilderbergers, the people who are trying to create a United States of Europe, it is their worst nightmare. You know, they can't sleep at night, George, because suddenly their wonderful plan to create this super state that they control, modeled on the Nazi occupation of Europe in World War II, and an economic domination by fascist cartels of the entire continent, it's all falling apart with Brexit. And there are many other countries who are looking at Britain saying, well done, lads, slapping the Brits on the back and saying, right, where next? Getting out of this appalling political fix-up. So that's one reason. The other reason, I think, is and I know there is some evidence for that, because you've got the Pan-European Union's chief, and they started around about the same time as the Nazi Party in Munich in the 1920s. I'm not sure his first name. I think it's either Karl or Otto von Habsburg, right? So one of these old...
Habsburg the Lion, yeah.
Or aristocrats. He's really angry about Brexit, and he said, and he actually is on the record last year saying that watching Brexit is like watching a reality TV program, because it's such fun watching the Brits try to leave. You know, he's saying, no, they're not going to be allowed to leave. We have so much power and control. The super wealthy, you know, what we're talking about here is a sort of old feudal, actually it's rather the Holy Roman Empire. You know, these kind of cults from the medieval times. That's the aristocratic lineage that Prince Charles and others are part of.
Right.
And so they, I think, were very, very annoyed about Brexit. They actually did believe that they could stop Britain leaving, and maybe they will, we shall see. But right. The Brits are certainly giving this a go. December this year, everything's due to be shaken up, isn't it, in this so-called Great Reset as Britain leaves. So I think there's a very good case for pinning this global pandemic to Brexit, you know, as a deliberate release in order to try and disrupt Brexit, or as a sour grapes, really, by the global elite. The other thing, though, is that they couldn't get their war going in Syria, could they, George?
They couldn't. They hated Trump for doing that, for backing out on attacking Syria.
Well, that's right, and they couldn't have won even if they had done, because the
McCain and all them were behind that, and Hillary and a whole bunch, Barack Obama's, administration. They did the Libyan too. The Libyan
plan,
war
obviously, you know, was to spend a lot of money, resources in ousting Assad. It was always a very, very risky policy to try and do that, because of the Tartars, I believe it's called, the naval base of the Russians in Syria. The idea that the Syria would be taken over by the West and the Russians denied a port there is extremely, it was very unlikely to happen, because if the Russian Navy doesn't have access to the Eastern Mediterranean, then it would be hemmed in the Black Sea.
So
the Russians are thinking to themselves, you know, this is a strategically important thing for us. We're not just going to be a pushover here. So they did, played a very clever game. It's like judo. You know, we all know that Putin is a master of judo and martial arts. They drew the West in to make them think that they could take Syria. Got very close to Damascus, closer and closer. But actually, there was ever any way that the Russian military were going to allow the West to have Syria, you know. And in a way, of course, this is very biblical, all this. Not only is this all taking place very close to the Holy Land, but the road to Damascus, you know. The conversion of the West has been taking place on road to Damascus, just as Paul in the Bible is on the road to Damascus, and suddenly, you know, he gets this kind of vision from God. What are you doing persecuting the Christians? Be a Christian yourself, because, right, you know, you're wasting your time trying to persecute them. And I think that's was an incredibly important moment once the West realized that it was never going to take Damascus. Well, right. I shouldn't say never.
What do you have on this world economic forum takeover of the UN or strategic partnership with the UN? What do you have on that?
Well, that's right, the strategic partnership with the UN and the World Economic Forum. This is something that's not being commentated on anywhere I've seen, George. Not even so-called alternative Russian press, you know, whatever the Chinese English language TV is, what, like watching paint dry. By the way, I was asked to actually interviewed for a job over there. They called me up to say, "Do you want to come over to China and do TV for us?" Which is
really nice. Man, you better get some chopsticks, Tony.
Yeah, I think also in a gas mask if you want to work in Beijing, George.
Man, I was because part of the Tianjin Square protest movement at UT. They don't want me anywhere over there.
It's even more smoky than downtown Dallas, I've heard. And, you know, anyway, the whole point really being to consolidate the power of the West's elite. Now, obviously, I'm a follower of the Bilderbergs, people might know.
Right.
You know, I've spent most of the my working life since I left the BBC, or was elbowed out of the BBC about in 1993. In 95 and 96, I came across the Bilderbergs. And yeah, I've spent a lot of my time since that really trying to unpick who they are, what are their origins, who's been running them, what's their aims, what's their goals. And it's pretty obvious that this is a very evil bunch of people chaired for the first 20 years of their existence by a former SS officer, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who married into the Dutch royal family and was from that moment on a spy for the Nazis. And, you know, he was involved in all sorts of terrible things during the war as a spy, treacherous bloke. And then eventually in 1975, after 20 years of chairing these Bilderberg meetings, he was discredited in the Lockheed scandal. He had to step aside. But the group itself has changed. It, obviously, David Rockefeller was very much involved. The Rothschild family, several visits from them. I believe it was Evelinda Rothschild who went along. But, you know, the Rothschild family has been so involved. I've just been reading a book called The Fifth Man, George, about Victor Rothschild's involvement in spying in the Second World War.
Yes, at Cambridge. He was one of the Cambridge Five, was he not?
He was the fifth man.
One of the five,
He was almost above suspicion. He was a very clever chap. Not only, of course, did he have enormous financial backing from his family bank, but he also did a whole stint defusing bombs during the war. So this was a very, very good way of ingratiating himself to all the British establishment. I thought he's very brave, you know, he might get himself blown up at any second. Well, it might also be that he was being passed secret information from Germany about the way these fuses operated, so he was able maybe a bit better than the ordinary bomb disposal person to pick apart a bomb. But anyway, he managed to get a tremendous cachet from doing this, and he ended up also doing security. So what he was doing as a security person, going around the boffins in World War II, checking up on all the new inventions. Of course, he was doing copies of all this stuff and passing it immediately to the Russians. It's also quite clear. And this includes atomic secrets, by the way. And it's also pretty clear that everyone attests to this, that Stalin knew what was going on about, you know, in the hierarchy of the British during World War II, before Churchill did, because Victor Rothschild was so efficient at passing the secrets to Stalin faster than anyone else.
Right, I got you.
There were all sorts of problems here, because everyone was saying to him, look, you shouldn't be doing this, mainly, not because we don't want to help the Russians, but because if you tell them too much, what happens is that the Germans can read their codes as well, so you're basically passing it to the Germans. Okay, so that's picture. Anyway, the Bilderbergers, let's get back to the World Economic Forum, because that's really a kind of public version of the Bilderbergers, right? We've now got, as the Labour leader over here, Keir Starmer, who he was one of the people that helped indict Julian Assange when he was the Director of Public Prosecutions here, so he's a traitor. And an appalling, terrible, dreadful, disgusting person for doing that. But he also failed to prosecute Jimmy Savile, you know, the BBC guy who was the most paedophile in British history. Keir Starmer quashed the prosecution by Surrey Police twice of Jimmy Savile. So he's now the leader of the opposition, would you believe? And so we've got a farcical, you know, situation here in the UK with an appalling political system that it's going to be very difficult for anyone to vote for either party, really. Boris is making such a mess of this COVID business. Although, of course, the ultimate agenda here, it all plays into the hands of the Bilderbergers, the World Economic Forum, and the Trilateral Commission, because Trilateral Commission is like one tier down from Bilderberg. It includes Japan, Australia, places like that too, and Keir Starmer's from there. But what they're doing, George, is pretty obvious to me, is they're moving towards a business-style government, right? So elected governments are being disrupted, messed about with, they're being attacked. I think it was actually Noam Chomsky back around 2000 quoted David Rockefeller in an article that he'd done in, one of the American papers, and it was a great quote, because actually I even got an email off Chomsky. It was lovely of him to send me one with the exact quote and where he'd gotten it from, because I only heard it in a lecture he gave in Oxford. And what he's saying there is somebody needs to replace government, and business seems best place to do it.
Right.
So This is the Rockefeller mission. Rockefeller Foundation, by the way, is enormous in China. So, as you can see, anyone that thinks that China and America are really rivals is a stupid person. I don't want to be too rude to you.
Well, the Yale in China movement was a theocratic, well, they had schools over there in the 20s. Yale, University of Yale, say. So the Skull and Bones was in China early on, say.
Well, that's right. The Bilderbergers, trilateral times, are every bit as powerful in China as they are in the West, right? So they're running this whole business from behind the scenes. The one thing I think is positive about it all, though, the crazy stuff that's going on with the, you know, attempts to maneuver to get people to have vaccines to persuade them. I don't think it's going to be a compulsory vaccine. I think it's basically going to be they'll make your life hell until you do have the vaccine. You know, when I got stuck over in New Zealand, I was told there that there was a flu jab program for all people working in hospitals. But 90% of the hospital workers, doctors, nurses, ancillary workers, etc., wouldn't have the jabs. And so what they did is they introduced a system of masks, compulsory masks in the hospitals, unless you had the jab.
I got you. And
within a few weeks, almost all the...
With the mask on were identified and ostracized and denigrated. That's what
and
they
did. So I don't want to wear this mask every day. It's doing my head in all that. Okay. It's just a way of coercing us. And, you know, this is Animal Farm. This is Animal Farm. Because a lot of the people, I think, that are getting us to have jabs aren't having them themselves.
Well this is 1984, Brave New World, Spectre, and all that all rolled up together. You know what I mean? Huh?
Yeah.
Look
at the positive side, because I don't honestly think it's going to work. So they're going to really have a go at getting everyone to do this, to behave like animals. But the human spirit, George, they don't understand
it. Now, that's important, the imagination that humans have to create very beautiful works of art and music and everything. That's what they're trying to destroy, it seems like.
Absolutely right. They've done all their computer models. They've played all their war games to see that this is going to work. They'll do everything they can to make it work, but it won't work. And, there'll be, I think, a lot of pain and destruction in the meantime, because obviously we're heading towards, this is an agenda which is going to...
It's a dangerous police state agenda. That's dangerous. That's the problem.
Yeah, so the idea is to distract our attention away from the Middle East war, which they're still working on pursuing. You know, the assassination of General Soleimani in January, has everyone really forgotten that? Well, certainly the Iranians and the people in that region haven't. You know, the idea that, that a foreign power can just come and assassinate somebody, this causes enormous resentment. It also, by the way, demoralizes your troops back home. You know, so they're thinking, well, if we're just a bunch of assassins, you know,
Militias have been attacking Americans over there all since then.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I think what we've got there also is the inability of the military to motivate human beings to do their fighting for them. You know, we've seen so much disgusting stuff going on with the Afghanistan wars, the Iraq wars. There's no real, I think, will to fight by the Western armies much. I mean, if you look at the Chinese forces, I think they're very well motivated, and they actually do believe in their own system.
It looks like, Tony, We the People is raising its head in all kinds of countries all over the world, and they're shunning some of these government atrocities and totalitarian tactics. See what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, with this Great Reset as well, it's economic warfare is going to be on the population. Right, so the population are going to be subject to economic warfare. Oh, I'm very sorry, all your savings have disappeared. Yeah, like we got in Argentina in 1999, 2000. You know, suddenly everything that you've worked for is gone, vanished.
Well, the strategic relationship that the World Economic Forum had occurred in June of 2019. In October was that event 201. Of Bill Gates and all of them. Then we had the China outbreak after that. This thing's been planned all the way.
No, I think you're right. And so who is going to front this Great Reset? Is it just going to be Prince Charles? I mean, he's got quite a good image, you know, even though people like to sort of ignore the fact that he was involved in the murder of his wife. He's managed to spin Harry out completely, or they've managed to spin Harry out completely out of the picture.
Oh, they got rid of him, didn't they, huh?
With Prince Andrew, they've both been spun out of the picture. See, they don't understand what's coming. I think they've just been moved
sideways. Well, what is this that Nigel Farage is outing about the Muslim influx coming across the English Channel, and the British are helping facilitate that, with protection of their gunboats and
there's nothing to do with Muslims, right? This is Serco. There's a company called Serco, what is nicknamed the Serpent Company, yeah, which is one of the biggest outsourcing companies in the world, run by Rupert Soames, I believe is his name. He's the grandson of Winston Churchill, and they are an absolutely massive outsourcing company. Not only are they getting paid for putting these migrants up in hotels in Britain, they're also running the boats that are supposed to find the migrants. So, you know, this is the joke here, is that you've got absolute massive gangster profiteering off of that whole situation. Well, well done for Nigel for pointing it out, you know, and bringing a stop to it. These are economic migrants. Some of them have even been selling their organs in order to pay for a passage to come across. Can't be encouraging this. We should never be encouraging this. And that's what they've been doing. Some people, of course, have paid vast amounts of money and ended up dying asphyxiated
Is the lockdown in UK going to work or not?
Sorry?
Is the lockdown in the UK going to work, or are people going to rebel against it?
Well, I mean, you know, okay, so the obvious answer is no.
Okay.
Because people were okay about doing this in the US back in March and April when people were dying. People are no longer dying. There's a very, very, very small number still dying with COVID-19. The amount is going up slowly, the number of deaths.
Well, the cases are going up at times, but the death rate is not that great.
Yeah, the death rate is creeping up, but that's only because there's so many more tests being done.
False positives, and then they're classifying all the deaths as COVID-19 when some of them are not.
Anyone that's in hospital now, everyone is being tested, right? So you get all those false positives in hospital, and then someone dies, which is what they sometimes do, unfortunately, but then they're being registered as a COVID death, as a false positive. So that's why the actual
been
going up.
It's fear. They're inciting the public with fear all the time about it.
So the big question for me is, who is going to front this? This Great Reset. Will it be Prince Charles, or will we have some puppet moron like Bono, you know, from U2, somebody like this to sort of front it? They're going to have to get all these people, I think, who are complete sellouts.
Well, it'll be like the Bill Gates and Prince Charles and those kind of people coming together, the same people at the Johns Hopkins. Those people will be pushing this.
get celebrities like Bono to do this sort of thing as well, just to try and make it credible. But anyone like me that realizes that these people are total sellouts.
Well, they are sellouts, all of them are, most of them.
Well, this is also this thing called the Ronavax, and we aren't calling it now a vaccine. We're calling it the Ronavax, George, or right. the Ronascan.
Oh,
which
man.
Is the new type of gene editing vaccines. They call them vaccines. They're not vaccines. They're going in there to snip your genes and to mess
well,
with you.
Well, it's RNA manipulation. That's what it is. Yeah. Yeah, DNA, RNA manipulation.
It's another thing that points towards this being a Bilderberg operation.
That's
the Bilderberg
right.
always been right into funding.
Well, Brave New World had that in the embryo. Remember what Aldous Huxley wrote about all that?
That's right, he did, and he did it as a warning, you know, just
yeah,
like
he had it all worked out, and then returned to Brave New World with his second book, and I read that when I was in my 16, 17 years old, 60 years ago, you know.
So I think, you know, we have been basically rinsed by these people for hundreds of years. I was listening recently to David Livingstone. He's written an amazing book, David. He's a Muslim scholar. He's actually a Canadian guy, but he converted to Islam for the simple reason, as he said, look, these people seem to behave to me in a way which is closer to the original, you know, God. So that they actually keep with Old Testament Bible values a lot. So anyway, but he did a book called The Dying God, which is an absolutely brilliant title.
Yeah.
It is what he's saying there is because the dying God is the God that dies as the sun goes down, right? This is the old pagan worship of the sun. But in he's also talking about he's also talking about in the same title the idea that God has been being is dying. In other words, the consciousness of who God is, what God is also being killed, the dying God. So anyway, in that book he talks about the way that the elites over the centuries have slowly destroyed God's presence in humanity, you know. So yeah, obviously there are some of us who are still very, very much believers, but they've done it in a very, very sneaky way. I mean, he's talking about the Royal Society.
They've taken and humanized the religions. Many of the Christian religions have been humanized versus humanitarian, you know what I mean? And God-centered. So instead of God-centered, they made them man-centered with humanism thought. See what I mean?
Exactly. Well, look, he's also, you know, he's talking about the way these institutions in this Illuminati-style way have been
yeah.
changed, right? With the Royal Society created under Elizabeth I, there's John Dee was involved in that.
CFR on this side of the Atlantic, yeah.
Well, that's much more recent. You know, I'm going back away, and then the Royal Society.
Oh, the Royal Society, the Scientific Society. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, they created Darwinism, right?
Yeah, Darwinism, right. That made us all into animals, right? And that we evolved into humans from animals. Right.
Apparently we were animals. It was all scientific. But the thing is,
right.
Darwinism created this vacuum in society where, you know, where is the spiritual? The spiritual's being taken out by Darwinism. So Alice Bailey and the Theosophists then step in to create this fake spiritual through spiritualism and the occult revival in the late 19th century, in the early 20th century.
Right.
I think he's done quite a good job in taking the readers through this, and he's also looking at the French Revolution, the US Revolution, you know, the Russian Revolution, the First World War, the Chinese
French Revolution,
Second World War, World War I, World War II,
yeah.
and looking at World War III, you know, and he's done, I think, a superb job in looking at the sort of history of how we've come to where we are with all this stuff. I mean, then, of course, you've got now, we're back to the English Civil War, because the English Civil War, in a way, started a lot of this, you know. It was a battle between the feudal classes here in the 17th century and the merchant classes, okay, the landowners and the businessmen had a massive war about
right.
who was going to run the country, because the king was taxing.
We
business.
Are many and they are few, right? Shelley?
Well,
right.
But you see, the thing is, back in those days,
yeah.
Back in those days, there were the Puritans, and they were basically these kind of, you know, fake religious people that would go around saying you're not allowed to have any fun. Well, we got the same thing now. We've got this crazy thing going on where you're not allowed to sing, you're not allowed to dance because you're exhaling and inhaling too much, you know, and breathing too much, which, you know, is very
bad. They probably put some kind of a breathing aqua lung on us and limit us with those tanks for fresh air. Huh?
So you can only dance with one of them on, yeah?
That's right. You can only go out of your residence with Aqualung on, and you have a certain 30 minutes of air in there, you have to come back to the house. See?
That's right. Yeah, so that's the crazy world that they're going into. And it is very puritanic, but it's the same kind of thing.
Technocracy is what Patrick Wood has written about, Technocracy Rising. Yeah.
Exactly. And sour-faced people on the television announcing all this all day long without a single smile that I'm reminded.
Well, you better get back in there because the virus is outside, you know.
Well, the virus is gone, basically. It went in June. There's also a new strain of this virus around. I can't remember the code name for it, but it's four letters and numbers. And this has been revealed several places, particularly the Malaysians, I think it was, or maybe Singapore. Scientists said there's a different strain, which is nowhere near as deadly now, which is going around. But anyway, of course, people have got herd immunity to it. You know, this is the thing, is people have, just like they would to an ordinary flu. Your body is actually an amazing thing. It's coping with this. It's coped with this.
Well, shaking hands with people actually immunizes you against a lot of things. See what I mean?
Well, this is what your Bakersfield doctors were saying. Point well made. We need to catch viruses. It helps us. And this is one of the problems. If you lock people away the whole time, they're not catching any viruses, then when the next one comes, that's going to hit them much harder.
It's got to be much more severe impact.
Obviously, you don't want elderly people to catch it, but they've been very risk-averse having these.
Well,
these
without the microbes, we can't digest food, and our plant life doesn't flourish and all that.
Viruses for a while, I think. But so, the main point here is that the flu vaccine, there was a study back in March, actually, of a U.S. Army unit. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, George. And they came down with COVID, right? And they're these young, very, very strong, strapping, tough lads. I don't know, you call them fellas over there, I think, came down with COVID in a U.S. Army unit. And they were really puzzled. The medics were really puzzled because about half of the unit came down with this stuff and half the rest of them, no problem at all. So they said, well, how the hell, you know, what's going on here? Why have these 25-year-olds been brought down by this virus and the others haven't? It turned out that the ones that had been brought down by it had the previous winter had had the flu vaccine, right?
Oh, so yeah, I got you. Well, that's the danger of a bionic weapon, or, you know, a bionic weapon of two things combining together to make a third thing happen.
I think what they call it is virus interference or vaccine interference. It's a technical term for it, but basically,
I'm not taking any vaccines, immunizations, or medicines, period.
I think you've got to, you know, basically give you, you know, I haven't heard a single announcement where they're saying take vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, because that's the best way to boost your immune system. And I said that on the New Zealand radio.
They have free flu shots over here in this country. Before COVID-19 hit, they give you free flu shots here at your local pharmacy.
To elderly people, do not take a flu jab.
Don't take anything external into your body. That's it.
I can say that with absolute certainty after reading that study from the U.S. Army, is that you're more likely to die.
Well, I went into the Army when I was like nearly 19. I was 18 still. And they gave us a series of shots and almost died that night on a Friday night. And I barely made it to formation early Monday morning. And I almost died over the weekend for all those shots we got.
What year was that then, George?
It would be 1963, January, into February, first week of February, 63.
I got to know a guy very, very well who had, he lived in London in a block of flats. Yeah. I went to visit many, many times, or several times, to interview him. He'd had Gulf War syndrome back in 1990, where they'd injected them.
Yeah, that was much later. We didn't experience anything at that level.
this idea that your body can take all these, and you know what? They're now doing it to newborn infants, right? So right. They're giving them a whole.
Oh, well, what they've done here is that the regime of those inoculation, immunizations are way, way too much for young infants and young children. And it, what it does is created autism and a bunch of asthma and everything in our
It's child abuse. It's child abuse.
Well, you got an autoimmune problem that it lurks in the background, see, of what they've been doing, because as they culture some of these immunizations and vaccinations and stuff, what they culture them on, like peanuts. They used to use peanuts, and then you'd get allergic to peanuts when you took the shot, see?
They have
been playing around with our biology, and it's detrimental now to our health.
Injecting a vulnerable baby who's just been born with a whole bunch of pathogens that could do sorts of damage to them for life.
Right.
What is that? It's not child abuse.
Well, what they're practicing is iatrogenesis, and that's the inducement of ill health or death by medical treatment through vaccinations, immunizations. It's a contrived plan, what it is.
It's not Dr. Goebbels, Dr. Mengele territory. You know,
Well, Mengele came to Argentina, and he operated in and out of this country under the name of Dr. Green. And he perfected the monarch program here in this country. Mengele perfected that monarch program based upon multiple personality disorder and creation of altered states.
You don't need to be a genius to work out that this COVID-19 program is ultimately satanic, George.
No, it is. It is definitely that. That's for sure. Because the secret societies and the mystery schools have been behind all this. Yeah.
I mean, I totally agree with you about the mystery schools. I think we've got to see it this as...
Well, it's cultic. I've studied the cults. Margaret Sanger, I don't know if you know that name. Cult in Our Midst was a big book she wrote, but this is not Sanger was the Planned Parenthood founder originally, that idea, but this is Margaret Sanger out of Berkeley area, California, and she was a genius and in cults and in describing cult behavior and the characteristics of cults. And what I see is all organizations are cultic, okay? That's why I don't join organizations anymore, see.
Well, no, I don't think so. Not all of them. I think if they're open.
But some are benign to you and can do some good. And then there are the worst ones that control you physically and confine you and imprison you. Those are the worst ones, see. Those are churches today.
How do you define a cult, though? How do you define a cult? Surely a cult is, the way you define it is through, you're not able, say, for example, you're part of an organization, you're not able to have any sway over who runs that organization. Now,
right, so there's always a master that is at the top of the cult that has all the answers. So, and they're the ones you have to seek out.
Yeah, but say for example, the Women's Institute in Gloucester or in Bristol.
Yeah, it's a hustle. It's a mind hustle. So we're trapped in a thought prison of ideas. It's ideas that continue to enslave us, see, into the thought prison.
But there are organizations, I disagree with you, because there are organizations that are not cliquey. If they're run by people who are not cliquey, then you will allow new people to move in and take over.
Well, you have to have some groups, and you have to have some organizations. But I tell you how you can tell the difference between good ones and bad ones, and it's real simple. Huh?
The cults take those organizations over.
I can tell you how to differentiate in a real simple way. Those organizations that preach forgiveness are okay. Those that don't are entrapping you. Most of them preach hatred for some outside group that they focus on and target. See what I mean? And they have you trapped in there in a field system of thought of hate and resentment for those outside people that are against you. See what I mean?
There's a definite move, even over the last 10 years or so, towards more cliquey organizations. You're either in or you're out kind of thing. If you're
it's a big hustle. The world, we're in a delusional state, but we don't know how to come out. You come out through forgiving self and others. That's it.
But a lot of our leaders now are puppet leaders and actual criminals.
Yeah.
They've had it too easy, I think. I mean, because they're not being criticized. The press is being controlled. You know, these people are getting arrogant. The leaders are getting arrogant. The Wizard of Oz behind the scenes is getting arrogant.
Well, what I see now, Tony, is that the level of corruptness now is far beyond what I ever imagined it would be in this country. Now, in England, I don't know, but we've got levels of corrupt people all the way from the bottom to the top and back again. See what I mean?
Okay, well, let's just look at Britain for a minute, because we've got two major characters, Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance, is the chief scientific officer and the chief medical officer for Her Majesty's government. But them are what you call rotating doors, yeah? So revolving doors. So they've been in and out of the vaccine industry for a long time. Patrick Vallance is a former president of GlaxoSmithKline, and he's also got 600,000 pounds worth of shares in GlaxoSmithKline.
Right.
And there he is making policy for the entire country. So these people are infiltrators. It's quite obvious to me. Infiltrators. They're in there to make money for their business and to sell out our health interests. But luckily, there's been quite a fight back here, George. Two main ways. We've seen in the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph and other newspapers that have been absolutely slating the government. Yeah. We've also had real action. The mayor of Middlesbrough in Teesside, up in the northeast of England, is an independent mayor, and he has been screaming and shouting about this. Of course, the BBC switch him off every time he comes on. You know, he'll say a few words, and then they switch the line off. They say, "Oh, sorry, we've lost him now." You know, but he's amazing. And so there's been a lot of fight back, actually, not by the control parties like Labour and the Conservative mayors.
Okay, I got a roofer that's putting on the roof at the other house.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead. So go ahead, Tony.
Just carry on. So we've got protests going on here, George, even though it's supposed to be illegal. For myself, I was in a protest over in Cardiff yesterday.
Okay.
And they gave me my little time to speak. I did a speech for about 20 minutes about this to a crowd of something like 400 people.
Right. I saw that.
I also spoke to some of the crowd as well. I had a good old chat with them, so I was there as a reporter as well as actually being given the opportunity to speak.
Right.
The other fantastic thing is that there's also a group of National Union of Journalists people who are really against this lockdown, and they believe that the public are being told a bunch of lies. So there are some really good gutsy journalists as well who are starting to get together and say, well, we've had enough of this. And you know what's precipitated this, right? It's like I said at the start, is because people are happy to do this for a short period of time. We were initially told 3 weeks.
Okay.
And once the death rate has come down, they're not going to carry on. The government and the pharmaceutical industry are trying to get a whole second wave thing going as we come into the winter.
Okay.
But there aren't the deaths to justify it, and the people know that. So they're not doing it. You know, there's a lot of people out there who are simply not going to comply. Yes, they're going to wear a mask because that's not too much trouble, but they're certainly not going to, stop visiting their loved ones and this sort of thing.
Right.
What we're seeing is we're seeing less, and I've just noticed this over the last few days, is less people are actually going publicly into town, but that doesn't mean to say they're not visiting their friends. There's an enormous sense, I think, in the background here of injustice.
Oh, man.
We're not going to be doing this all over again. We've had enough. And so that's why I think we're seeing the kickback, both from the politicians, the few politicians that are honest, decent people, and also the people coming out on the streets to protest about it, which is great to see.
Yeah, that's good. That's good, Tony. You did good on that.
Especially the young people. You know what? The students. I always come back to the young people at the end, George, don't I? Often when I talk to you, but they are absolutely dead against this. They are being stalked by police, by COVID marshals.
Yeah.
And funny thing is that actually many years ago, in 1974 in fact, there was a thing on the television called The Goodies, and I would recommend any of your listeners that like the British humour from the 60s and 70s, things like Monty Python, to check out The Goodies, because The Goodies were three guys that just used to have lots of fun every week on the TV and just send everything up, and it was a kind of satirical comedy show, which would be a kind of extended play. And in this play, they take over the country. They become so popular with their pop songs that they get elected as prime minister. Yeah, so they're running the whole country. But their pop songs become so popular that the country starts spending all their money on their records, and they run out of money, and the country goes into debt.
It's
just lazy they are, right? Anyway, so they get booted out of power because they become very unpopular, and a new fascist government takes over, and they have these guys called the Mirth Inspectors, and they say, well, too much messing around and having fun. And the Mirth Inspectors, have a look for them up on online.
Okay.
They're the most funny thing I've seen, and they're very much like the COVID marshals. They go around, anyone that's having fun, they're on horseback, and they've got great big...
Sounds like compliance inspectors, you know,
that's
officers.
That's right. That's it. You got
compliance.
It. They're called the Mirth Inspectors, and they run around on horseback with clothes and masks, and they've got great big cudgels, and anyone that's laughing or having fun, they smash them and knock them to the ground to stop them having fun. They even bash children in their prams. If they're playing with their toys and smiling and laughing, they'll come and smash them.
Do you remember the time when the police were holding back those big ruffians in London when they wanted to go in and burn the damn Bank of England down? Remember that? Outside there?
Yeah.
I think it was a G20 or something, or G7 in London. Remember that?
Yeah, J18 maybe.
I was watching that live. I got a video feed from there, and I was watching that live, and those people almost broke those police ranks and went in there to the Bank of England. There were two
around the corner to New Court.
It was exciting to watch that.
Bank of England. The Bank of England isn't the problem. The problem is the Rothschilds around the corner in New Court. They're only about 2 minutes walk away from the Bank of England, but that's the problem. They are political bankers who have the arrogance to think that they can control everything by being kingmakers as well.
The Tavistock down there off of Tabernacle Street too. I visited with Larry Swan 1 year.
The protests over here are quite interesting, though, because they've been kind of driven underground a bit.
What's that?
The protests, there was an attempt to drive them underground because a lot of their material's being censored by people like Facebook and WhatsApp, things like that. So they have to sort of organize quietly, and, you know, obviously the security managers are reading it all, but, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes because it's being driven underground. Now, this is exactly the sort of thing that happened in Nazi Germany. You're not allowed to express your views anymore. If you think that the government's wrong, then you're somehow putting everybody at risk health-wise.
Yeah, we're coming to the close of the show this evening. Thank you for being with us, Tony, and tell our listening audience where they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, let me make this point, because the thing is that government policies have been killing people, not the criticism of them.
Right.
You know, that this is the
they're censoring us off of all the news platforms that we need to reach people, that they're taking us off.
It's interesting to see the experts, you know, people. I mean, Dolores Cahill, for example, is.
They're throttling us down, choking us down, phantom banning us. And we don't know. We're reaching a much smaller audience of people like myself than used to. Okay, Tony, thank you.